The following talk is given by Angela Marie Patnode, Transformational Coach and Spiritual Teacher. Well, tonight I wanted to explore some teachings from reading her, a book about her. She never wrote a book, but this is a book about her, from a master from India, and it's a woman. And there are not that many women masters out there from India. And her name's Deepa Ma. And she got that name because she had a child, a daughter named Deepa. And she was Deepa's mother. So people started calling her Deepa Ma. That's how she got that name. And Deepa Ma is a different kind of story from... like the story of masters who grew up in it or were, you know, from a young age started studying the different Buddhist teachings. And she did some of that, but she also had a very challenging life for a while. She was born in 1911 and she was married off by the age of 12 in the Indian tradition. She was born in Bangladesh and was married at 12, and then her husband moved to Burma, and so she went there to be with him. And then they moved back to India, and she ended up in Calcutta. And during that time, she was not able to have children. 18 years old, woman, married, not able to bear children. Really a difficult spot to be in for a woman in India, because that's expected. And her husband continued to love her. They fell in love in their marriage, and it was a marriage that they really supported. It sounds like they supported each other. And then at the age of 35, she ends up getting pregnant with a daughter. And her daughter ends up dying a couple months after birth. And then, a few years later, at 39, she ends up getting pregnant again, has another daughter, and this daughter survives. And then a couple years later, she has another pregnancy, a son, and he dies. So she is so grief-stricken by losing her two children, she starts to become very, very ill. She ends up so grief-stricken that she can't take care of her one daughter. And so the father, her husband, is trying to take care of her and the daughter. And then he ends up coming home one day, I think around the age of 55 or so, and has a heart attack and dies. So here she is, single, widow, with one daughter. And she's... again, so ill that she can't function, really. And a doctor finally said, you're dying from a broken heart, and if you don't do something about what's going on in your mind, you're going to die. Like you need to do something about what's going on in your mind. She decided there and then that she would sell everything she had, make sure her daughter was taken care of, and she was going to go off to a monastery, learn meditation, and just thought she would die there. So she goes off to the monastery. She's 45 at this point. Goes off to the monastery. And she's able to do some walking meditation there, sitting and walking. She's only been there like 2 or 3 days. So she starts doing some walking meditation. And she notices... she's in this walking meditation, and all of a sudden she can't move, but she doesn't know why. She's like, why can't I move? She just feels frozen, like, why can't I move? And then she looks down, and she sees a dog attached to her leg that's biting her leg. And what had happened is she was in such deep concentration, she didn't even feel the pain of the dog on her leg. And that was the start of, I don't know if it's a gift, but she, in the book, they talk about how she went from one stage of enlightenment to the next so quickly, so much faster than an average person would. That was the start of it. And so she was completely mortified after she saw this dog. Like, I want to stay at the monastery. And the monks are like, no, you need to go to the hospital and get some rabies shots. And otherwise you're going to die for sure. So she starts going. So she goes to the doctor or to the hospital and gets these rabies shots. And she's losing more weight. And they're like, you can't come back to the monastery. You need to go home and start eating and taking care of yourself. So she goes back home. And she starts to become more healthy. She meditates. She just keeps meditating. And her health starts to come back. And she seeks out teachers. She wants to study with people. And back then, this was in the 70s, back then she couldn't go study typically with, you know, like in a typical way that a male could. It just wasn't permitted at that time. So her sister and her daughter would, like, you know, not that they were sneaking, but they had to go in a different way. They had to, like, climb up the hillside instead of coming in the main entrance because that was for the men. And she was so determined and knew that that was her path. And she knew she needed to meditate. So she studied with this teacher named Manindra and studied with him. And she was living in Calcutta in this apartment building. And she started to invite people to her apartment. And her first student was one of her neighbors, mother of six young children. And this mother says, well, how can I be enlightened? You know, I've got six children. I can't go off to a monastery. Deepa Ma says, well, what I want you to do is every time you're breastfeeding, I want you to be totally present with the sensation of your child on your breast, getting milk, and what that feels like, and totally present with your child as they're nursing. And she did that every day, and there was a lot of it. She had six young kids. And she ended up, in the book, they say that she ended up moving into the first stage of enlightenment just through that. Being present with her child breastfeeding. So Deepa Ma, a big part of her teaching was saying, anyone can be on this path. Anyone can find peace inside. Anyone can see through the veil of illusion of the ego without needing to go to a monastery and cut yourself off from the rest of society. That this life that we have, that we live every day, is the path. It's very much a part of the path of enlightenment, if you want to call it that, or awakening. And so here she is. She starts inviting people into her apartment building, and people come. They just start coming, and they start coming, and the entire room, and the rooms are packed, and people are standing out in the hall and on the balcony, and they all just want to be in her presence. And I want to share some of what has been written by the author here. She says, the whole path of mindfulness is this. Whatever you are doing, be aware of it. Deepa Ma was living an example of how to live in this world, of how to practice, and the mundane activities of our day-to-day existence can be made one. She insisted that the practice be done all the time and that we do the things we do throughout the day without making them into problems. Deepa Ma wanted to know, how awake are you in your life? Are you just thinking about being mindful, or are you really doing it? And this is a great story by Jack Kornfield. And Jack Kornfield, Sharon Salzberg, and Joseph Goldstein all ended up studying with her. In Calcutta, they went to her apartment and sat with her and learned from her. And those are the three main teachers, Westerners, that brought Buddhism back to the United States. And Jack says, she encouraged me to live what I was teaching. The quality of her presence was like that in the Hasidic tales, where somebody asked, why did you go to see this rabbi? Did you go to hear him give a great lecture on the Torah or see how he worked with his students? And the person said, no, I went to see how he tied his shoes. Was he mindful? Deepa Ma didn't want people to come and live in India forever, be monks, or join an ashram. She said, live your life, do the dishes, do the laundry, take your kids to kindergarten, raise your children or your grandchildren, take care of the community in which you live. Make all of that your path and follow your path with heart. I'm curious to know if Jack ended up titling his book A Path with Heart from his teachings with Deepa Ma. Yeah. And there's many gems in this book of how she taught. And one of them is her relation between mindfulness and loving kindness. And I love how she says this. Somebody asked Deepa Ma whether she should be practicing mindfulness or loving kindness. And Deepa Ma answered, from my own experience, there is no difference between mindfulness and loving kindness. For her, love and awareness were one. Think about it. When you are fully loving, aren't you also mindful? And when you are fully mindful, is this not also the essence of love? Different way to think about that. It's beautiful. And part of Deepa Ma's teaching, she was immersed in a patriarchal system at that time, and Buddhism was patriarchal at that time. Women weren't allowed to be meditating, not invited to the teachings, that kind of thing. And Deepa Ma made some very strong stands for women during that time. Not from an activist, I'm right, they're wrong, but in a, women can do this too. And actually women have a direct line or an easier time with meditation or awakening because of the connection with the heart and the emotions. Whereas men aren't given that same encouragement as a child to develop that. Deepa Ma once said, women have an advantage over men because they have more supple minds. It may be difficult for men to understand this because they are men. I asked her.
There's a first.
Yeah. I asked her, is there any hope for us? This is Joseph Goldstein asking this. Is there any hope for us? She answered, the Buddha was a man, and Jesus was a man, so there is hope for men, too. Isn't that great? She's just so matter-of-fact. She's really sweet. Tiny little woman. So there's lots of stories about Deepa Ma in here that are just so beautiful to read about. And she ended up... she died as she was praying in a prayer position in front of the Buddha. She just died here with her palms together, bowing down. And died naturally. And they said there was a beautiful expression, calm, peace on her face when she went. She emphasized 10 lessons to live by. And I want to share 5 of them with you tonight, just to share all 10. It's like too much information to take in, right? But to start with 5 is a great place. So the first one is choose one meditation practice and stick with it. If you want to progress in meditation, stay with one technique. So what she talks about is when people start with a certain technique and the difficulties arise or come up in that technique, they want to go try another technique. Like, no, but this one's not working. At least that's what their mind is saying. Oh, I'll go try this other technique. Oh, I'll go do some chanting. Oh, I'll do yoga. I'll do some mantras. I'll do this. Because they don't want to be with the difficulties, the difficult emotions, or the challenge of what's happening in that moment. So she's really making the point to find a meditation technique. She's not emphasizing that there's a right one. She's just saying find one and stay with it. Stay the path and not jump around from one path to another. And then lesson two, meditate every day. Practice now. Don't think you will do more later. That's a teaching for life, right, in our American culture. Yeah. She stated firmly that if you want peace, you must practice regularly. And that insisted that people find, her students find time for meditation every day, that it's really important. She urged students to make every moment of their lives a meditation. A meditation being mindfulness of that moment with whatever is happening. Not trying to make it a certain way, but mindfulness of that moment. Being in that space with whatever is coming up, whatever is occurring. And that's what she means by your life is the path. This is the path. And then lesson three, any situation is workable. Any situation is workable. Each of us has enormous power. It can be used to help ourselves and help others. She says you can be a spouse and parent and still pursue the Dharma. The Dharma being the teachings of awakening or waking up. There's nothing ultimately to cling to in this world, Dipa Ma taught, but we can make good use of everything in it. Life is not to be rejected, it is here. And as long as it is here and we are here, we can make the best use of it. She's saying, stop complaining, you have no problems. Be in your life and be with what arises. Be with what arises. I love this. She says, or the author says, that she wasn't attached to a particular teacher, place, or lifestyle. The whole world was her monastery. Isn't that beautiful? The whole world was her monastery. Love that. Sharon Kreider, I don't know who that was, but I'm guessing one of her students, remembers, at my idealistic age of 20, when I wanted to believe if I sat long enough with the right teacher, everything would be okay, she showed me it was about being awake to much more. She was an example of how to be a true mother to the world. To be a true mother is to feel life intensely. To be a true mother is to embrace whatever comes along with awareness and to make all circumstances my teachers. Sometimes we don't want to do that. Sometimes I don't want to do that. I don't want the teacher. I don't want this teacher right now. I don't want this teaching. I don't want this to happen. And here it is. And Dipa Ma is saying, open to it. Open to each situation, each person that's presented to us in your life as a teacher. Lesson four, practice patience. Patience is one of the most important virtues for developing mindfulness and concentration. Always something to practice. Patience. Whether it's patience with time frame, right? Something taking longer than we think it should or we want it to. Or patience with ourselves in the process. Saying, it's okay that I'm not getting it right now, whatever getting it is, and instead of I should be getting this more or deeper or faster or etc. or with someone else in our lives. It's written, patience is forged by constantly meeting the edge. If you stay with your meditation practice, it is inevitable that difficulties will arise. In the most challenging situations, merely showing up, being present may be all that is possible, and it may be enough. It may be enough. Patience is a lifetime practice to be developed and refined over time. According to Dipa Ma, patience is essential in maturing the mind and therefore is one of the most important qualities to cultivate. Is anyone's mind like Ah! That damn patience again. And then lesson five is free your mind. Your mind is all stories. Deepa Ma did not say that the mind is mostly stories. She said that there is nothing in the mind but stories. It's all a play. It's all a story in our mind. These are the personal dramas that create and maintain the sense of individual identity, who we are, what we do, what we are and are not capable of doing. When someone said, "I can't do that," she would ask, "Are you sure?" Or, "Who says?" Or, "Why not?" She was challenging the story. She constantly challenged people's stories. And sometimes she would just laugh out loud when people would walk in and talk about their problems or challenges or what's going on. She would just laugh and say, "It's a story. It's a story." She's not that she was discounting pain or suffering. She experienced a lot of that. You know, she had a dark night of the soul too, so she had extreme compassion and love for people too. At the same time, Deepa Ma taught that the mind is not an enemy to be gotten rid of. Rather, in the process of befriending the mind, in getting to know and accept it, it ceases to be a problem. The mind ceases to be a problem. And when the mind ceases to be a problem, we don't have problems in our life anymore. How liberating! It's wonderful. In a group interview, Jack Kornfield innocently asked, "What is it like in your mind?" Deepa Ma smiled, closed her eyes, and quietly answered, "In my mind there are three things: concentration, loving kindness, and peace." Jack, not sure if he heard her correctly, asked, "Is that all?" "Yes, that is all," Deepa Ma replied. The room was silent. Then there were a few sighs and quiet laughs, followed by Jack's barely audible whisper, "How wonderful." There are many people in this book that write how just being in her presence created this sense of incredible peace within themselves. Like the amount of love and compassion and mindfulness was extraordinary. And she had that suffering. She had those challenges, physical, emotional, loss, so much loss in her life. And to follow the path of awakening through meditation and Theravadan Buddhist teachings, and came into this place of such peace and love within herself. It's a really inspiring story. Wonderful teacher. I don't know if there's anything recorded that you can get recorded by her. I don't know that anything was recorded. But filled with so much humility, so humble, and a teacher for all of us, living the path of modern day society, living in life, working, having a family, getting ill, having challenges in life, and that it's possible for anybody to have peace no matter what's going on in your life. Inspiring. Are there any questions or thoughts with this teaching? Let me share.
I was thinking about tragedy, and it's along these same lines, that we create the tragedy. There is no tragedy without us. It's like mind talk that makes that tragedy out of whatever event.
Yeah, it's our reaction. It's our... it's how we receive it that it becomes the tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And life is filled with loss. Not that it's all loss. There's so much birth and joy, and that's part of it too, but it's inherently challenging that way. Yeah. It's our identification with the loss after a certain amount of time. We keep going with that story of the grief or the problems that we have. So we're going to complete for now tonight's teaching. It's so wonderful to have you here in this space on a cold, cold evening at like 0 degrees. So I appreciate it. And have a wonderful evening. Namaste.